Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, toy department time. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you this afternoon, sir?
Oh, I'm hanging in there on paternity leave. And naturally, a couple days before paternity leave, I got pretty sick. So that's been a nice, fun adventure to have my time off besotted by snot. But otherwise, hanging in there.
Hey, free time is still free time. You know what I mean, man?
Yeah, yeah.
I could go for free time, right?
It feels less free when you're oozing from the nose, but otherwise.
if I have to ooze through the nose to not have anywhere to be, I'd take that deal right
Amen.
Now.
Amen. No, you're right. You're right. As would I. As have I.
All right, we've got a ton of challenge stuff to get to today, but let's start with some pop culture content. Want to do that?
I do want to do that.
Where should we begin? How about the chair? You want to start with the chair?
I think I do. Yeah. Okay. Yes. How much of this?
The new Sandro Netflix show, for those of you that didn't do the homework.
Yeah. How much did you watch?
I watched at least two episodes, maybe three.
Mm.
I might need a wiki to let you know how many I watched.
Okay, so as I mentioned, free time, a little sick, I watched it all.
You watched the whole thing?
It's only six episodes.
Okay.
And
yeah, I only watched two.
I have some very complicated feelings that I think it might be a little tricky to discuss without spoiling, but I will do my best.
Mm. Okay.
Why don't you tell me where you're at with the chair?
So the J.D. Plas character is kind of his – are you talking about where I'm at in terms of the story? Or
no.
In terms of where my feelings on the show are. Sorry.
I want to know your feelings, not the plot points.
Gotcha. Okay. I think that here's where I'm at. I'm going to finish this one, particularly since there's only four more episodes. I think it's interesting. It feels like it has potential. I am intrigued. The first two episodes, and I guess the third one, were written by Amanda Peet, who had a big role in creating this show. And I feel like it is somewhat of a piece with her late career vibe. And so I'm kind of interested in that. I think Sandra Oh is always excellent. I think J.D. Plas is generally excellent. And the themes are interesting. So I'm kind of there. I don't know if I feel like it's all totally gelled, and it's, you know, this is nominally a comedy that and occasionally produces chuckles, but I would not say that I find it hilarious, and I don't know that it's trying to be, if that makes sense. So it's kind of in that, you know, sort of stuck in that dramedy world, if that makes sense. And I don't know that it leans too heavy in either direction, you know?
I agree with that. And I would say that that particular feeling, which I also had, becomes more and more troubling as the show goes on. You mentioned themes. How are you interpreting what you've seen so far?
How am I interpreting it?
Well, like, if you had to describe what this show is about thematically in a few sentences, how would you say it?
I mean, I would say, you would start with set in the world of academia. And watching the university and faculty try to navigate the not only the changing racial and social constructs, but the economics of college and, you know, trying to balance attracting student interest and young person interest with giving them, you know, things that are good for them. And, okay. You know, also then there's sort of kind of a dueling story with Sandra Oh's character sort of balancing her family life and her professional life and the particular challenges of an adoptive immigrant family.
Right. Okay.
Does that sum it up?
That sums
that
it
was
up.
Probably, that was more than two sentences.
No, I think that was really good. I think it was really good, and okay. it touched on a lot of the things that I think I want to talk about. Let's start, since you ended, with the family part. Because I think, ultimately, family drama is less like troubling in a worldly sense, no matter what. But I think you did a very good job describing the situation that I think highlights my, I don't want to say problem, but issue.
Discomfort?
Discomfort is a good word. Like you said, we're in like a dramedy situation. There's funny and there's very, you know, real, I guess, drama. You mentioned she's a single adopted mother. And I think by now you've seen that chainsaw drawing, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So in one of the first couple episodes, her adopted daughter draws what is undeniably hilarious, but also deeply troubling, right? Of a picture.
Yeah.
She's like, what? How old is she supposed to be? 5 or 6, it seems like? 7, 8? I'm terrible with kids' ages.
Yeah, I would say second grade or earlier, I would say.
Right.
So probably 7 or under, yeah.
And she's drawn a picture of someone slicing someone else's neck with a chainsaw that says, like, this is about to happen to you or something like that, right? Undeniably hilarious. Also deeply troubling. Like, if my kid ever draws that at school, we're going to doctors. Right?
Are you saying the fact that she didn't bring her to a doctor right away is discomforting to you, or?
Well, I'm not saying that exactly. I'm saying we're clearly.
I feel like you're tipping around plot points for my benefit here.
No. I mean, there are other things with like the her daughter's behavior is consistently hilarious, but if you think about it, pretty upsetting. And I'm not sure this. Say again.
I feel like the daughter's behavior, it just read to me as very television, right? Like it's.
Well, that's the problem.
It's not common to have a preternaturally mature, child, right? Or wise beyond their years, child is sort of a common television trope, and that seems like what's happening here. Largely because you mostly have adults who are writing for children, right?
So, right, but the child is not just wise beyond her years, and it's not even really wise beyond her years. It's just clever. It's the like you said,
yeah,
it's
you're
adults
right. Clever is probably a
kids.
Better word. Yeah, yeah.
But
she talks more like an adult than you would expect.
Yes, sorry. But it's more that she is like there are they have drawn a character in this daughter, who clearly has deep seated troubling issues involving her adoption and her family life. And all sorts of God knows what. And they don't. They present that without exploration and then play it for laughs. And I don't know quite how I feel about that. Now, let me try to explain how that transfers to the rest of the show, which is a much bigger issue in my view. Have you gotten to the. Like, okay. In the first couple episodes, J. Duplass is struggling because his wife died a year ago, right?
Right.
And there's like a romantic thing going on between him and Sandra Oh a little bit. But have you gotten to how he gets in trouble at school?
Yes. So he is in trouble. Like the students are passing his thing around, but he is not yet, you know, and the last I saw, he was like on his way to a hearing, but the hearing has not happened.
in the last thing I watched, if that makes
okay.
sense.
Okay. And if I, in case no one's watched this, if I asked you to describe J. Duplass as a professor, how would you do that?
That's challenging because what we're seeing of J. Duplass right now, right, is J. Duplass at a breakdown. You know what I mean?
Right. So let me try a different
respected, but right now it seems to be a pretty terrible professor.
Yeah, okay.
But he's not showing up and stuff, you know what I mean? So
right. But if you had to judge what kind of professor he was before his wife died, how would you describe it?
I would expect it would be pretty good, right?
Right.
He was intensely popular at a minimum, correct?
Intensely popular, had written a popular novel. And in the moments he actually teaches in the first episode or two, you're like, oh, he's an engaging guy who wants to understand his students and cares, right?
When he knows what class he's in.
Right, right. I mean, putting aside the fact that his life is spinning out of control. So he goes viral for a Nazi salute, which is done half drunk in the course of a totally reasonable explanation of history, right?
Correct. It was not. It was not entirely out of context. It was not. It was not brandished in a hateful manner.
In
right?
any
he was
way,
talking about fascism and something else. And
right.
Kind of,
and if I asked you, based on how the show portrays him, is J. Duplass's character a good person?
I would put J. Duplass's character in the difficult men bucket. Right. Means well, nice guy. It's some points is problematic. Does that make sense?
That's
like,
fair.
Complicated. But, complicated individual.
Yes. You know? And would you say there's any concern whatsoever that he's a Nazi?
On the show's part? No.
No, I mean, as a person, that character, are you concerned about his Nazism?
No. My assumption is that this is a vehicle to explore the campus dynamic of cancel culture, mob justice, in the same way that the professor filing a Title IX report with the Title IX investigator was kind of right. They went and explored that dynamic for a couple of minutes. I would assume that was part of this plot, was to talk about the way that these sort of things spread on campus, but I could be wrong.
You're exactly right. So, here's the problem. I'm going to have to spoil it to a degree here. I hope you don't mind. But he's about to get railroaded, okay?
Yeah, I would have guessed that, yeah.
And
he clearly doesn't see it coming, so it's like, it's not going to be like, I just got to argue, it's just going to be no big deal. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. And there's a point where he tries to have like a group forum and steps on his words a little bit, and a mob of students turns against him and shouts him down, basically. And it just escalates to the point where they just fire him, basically. And I guess I'm just not totally comfortable with what this show seems to be trying to say.
I can tell.
Because it seems to me like they're saying, hey, here's J. Duplass, a really good professor who's definitely not a Nazi, who is also very good at this, and when not drunk and mourning his dead wife, an excellent professor. And he did this one thing, and it was ripped out of context by a bunch of psychopathic left-wing students, and they railroaded him right out of town. And see what happens to a good teacher these days?
Well, if I could push back just on that slightly, wouldn't you say any professor who is teaching while drunk is maybe not a great professor?
Well, I guess that's exactly what I'm uncomfortable with. If J. Duplass is bad at this, if J. Duplass deserves, if this character deserves to be fired, It's for being drunk. It's for being late. It's for not showing up to staff meetings and to his classes. And it's intimated that this goes on for a year. That for a year, he's an irresponsible nutbag. But that's fine. Just don't you dare get caught on a TikTok doing something that looks worse than it is, that has nothing to do with who you are or what you're actually doing in the classroom. Because what's going to get you fired.
Isn't that the way that things kind of work in the world sometimes? You know what I mean?
I honestly don't know. But I will say this.
You know what I mean?
That's not a professor at hold on. That's a dude who allegedly created hostile working environments for years.
Allegedly. And look,
hired himself to host Jeopardy.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's exactly a comparable situation, and I'm not saying that whatever the guy did or didn't.
I don't care. Hold on. Mike Richards is still the executive producer of Jeopardy.
Exactly. This is what I mean, right? But my point in that was Mike Richards is still the executive producer of Jeopardy, and no one cares, right? But the internet and the world decided that they wanted him to not be the host of Jeopardy, and they found a way to do that. And I'm not saying that he should be the host of Jeopardy or he shouldn't. I kind of think he shouldn't if I'm, you know, being fair. But what I am saying is that what happened to that guy wasn't really about his behavior, because if it was, he wouldn't be the executive producer of the show. So all I'm saying is that the way that these things play out in real life often has a lot to do with the winds of public opinion, and those things are often divorced from the context of what happens, and that is my point. I'm just saying that I don't know that the show is taking a stand that is right or good. It's hard for me to say. I haven't watched it all yet, but I don't think it's wrong to necessarily portray that, because sometimes these things become about something that may not be the thing it's really about. Especially in an environment where things go viral, right? And then people have opinions.
I guess what I'm saying is I hope I see the analog you're drawing. To me, it's a very different situation, drastically different. Because Mike Richards hired himself to be a forward-facing, on-television, public job. And you're right that in a perfect world, like, if he's out there harassing people, then he'll lose the executive producer job too. But to me, something is accomplished by not allowing him to hire himself for the most public-facing role. And it's a legitimate reaction to a guy who doesn't deserve the job. Whereas this...
I think you're focusing a little bit on the details.
Well, but here's my point. If this is really what's going on in academia, we are so much more screwed than I even thought.
Okay, well,
if you're telling me a mob of students, mobs of allegedly the brightest minds in our youth, you know, late teens, early 20s, can't suss out whether someone's a Nazi and what, like that. I just.
Okay. Can I give
it
you
suggests
an example
that mobs
from
students
academia?
Are, it suggests.
Can
that
I give
mobs
you an example from academia? Yeah. We draw an analogy. Nicole Hannah Jones, I believe is her name. I apologies if I got that wrong. I debate Wells on Twitter. Was up for a prestigious tenured position at University of North Carolina, and a bunch of prominent conservative donors did not like that she was a part of that New York Times 1619 project, right, which is a right wing hot button issue, and so they rallied around the campus and got her tenure reviewed, and then there was a backlash to that, and they decided they were going to reinstate her, and then eventually she decided that she didn't want to be a part of it anyway, and she left. So this is an example of none of this really had anything to do with her or what she taught or the quality of work or anything. It was all wrapped up in controversies that really had nothing to do with anything other than the fact that she participated in this one thing that, you know, is in the New York Times, right? Like quality journalism that some people objected to, right? Or objected to the idea of, or objected to the discourse around. And now she's not teaching there anymore. So I don't like, I don't think that this is, I don't, I like this just,
but the stuff details matter. Far-fetched. The details what? Matter. The
they
details
don't, in
matter.
Bro. That's
no,
what
no,
I
no,
mean.
No, no, no. But they absolutely do, Derek, because it this is art. And if this show is you know, postmodern art and there is no meaning, then I think it's a pretty irresponsible subject to take on without assigning meaning to.
Right.
And if there is meaning, you understand the situation you just described was a bunch of rich conservative donors acting irresponsibly on purpose, as opposed to a bunch of, again, allegedly the brightest minds of the youth in our country acting irresponsibly out of ignorance. It's
think that occasionally happens on college, that a bunch of 20-year-olds occasionally act out of ignorance or go off a little half-cocked about something that has the look of something that would be – I'm just saying that this – I don't get your point.
My point is –
I think this stuff happens all the time.
But –
Like
okay.
In real life.
I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't. If there are tons of examples of really high quality, not Nazi college professors getting thrown out for like a, again, it just, it's a bunch of kids, it's a bunch of kids getting it wrong and a bunch of adults allowing themselves to be railroaded by a bunch of kids who they know are getting it wrong.
But isn't portraying that, isn't that in itself saying something about, right, like about contemporary college culture? Like, isn't that the – I don't know. Look, I feel better qualified to talk about the meaning of the show's season. I don't know if it's – if they're planning to do more of these or not once I've seen it all. But I just don't – like, I don't know. I just doesn't – that plot point does not feel very out of bounds to me. So –
well, no, it's not that the right. plot point is out of bounds. It's that it is presented in such a way like, yeah, man, this is what's out there happening. It's kids run amok, getting good professors fired for bad reasons. And then at the end, it's like, yep, that happened. And there's no. So, like, I guess I just don't know what you're saying. Are you saying these kids need to get brought to heel? Like, we got to get this under control?
I don't.
And if that's
that
what you're
that's
saying,
what
it
saying.
Feels an awful lot like, oh, cancel culture is so bad, it's infesting our college. And I don't believe that.
I also don't feel like that.
Like the examples
like
you came up with.
I don't feel like this guy's totally innocent. You know what I mean? Like
he's not. He's not totally innocent.
He put himself in a position that this sort of thing could happen. So, I don't know. All right.
I'm not defending the guy. I'm questioning what we're trying to say here.
Right, but that's what I mean. If you were talking about like, I think you were like saying like, "Hey, the show's like railroading is good," yeah, which or railroading happens, and this is a real problem. And I don't know that like, you know, again, I'm not entirely qualified. There's four episodes I haven't seen, but it just doesn't strike me as where this thing's going from where I sit right now. So
So if I told you that that's exactly where it goes. That, hey, railroading's a real thing and it's a problem.
Yeah, let's revisit this. I'll finish it. And we can revisit it.
Okay, because that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. Is it doesn't tell me. It doesn't go anything beyond what you just said. Hey, look at this railroading out here. These kids are a problem. That's
yeah,
what it felt
look,
like.
I
to
think
me at
part
the
of it is that maybe like I like look I. The cancel culture debate gets tiresome quickly, and I don't want to wade too deep into it. And I don't think that it is a problem run amok. But do I think that there are college professors on college campuses getting railroaded right now undeservedly? Yeah, I think that happens. I'm not saying it's an epidemic.
You think cancel culture is negatively affecting college professors?
Do I think cancel culture is negatively?
Because I think that is pretty absurd. Like,
no,
the notion of that sounds absurd to me. And that is essentially my problem with this show.
Mm. Yeah, so all right. Well, I guess we're probably somewhere in the middle on that then.
I would like I think you should finish it, and we should potentially just quickly revisit it next week. We've talked too much about it already, but
I agree. I just fundamentally believe that cancel culture is really just we're just talking about accountability.
I think that's that my point.
There's a greater accountability than before.
And
so that stakes are higher, and at sometimes like they don't always get it right. Like sometimes people are held accountable for shit they shouldn't really be held accountable for. I do believe that that happens. I don't think that's an epidemic.
Right.
I don't think it's something that we need to like change the system or not or stop holding people accountable for. But I do think it happens. Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
I don't know that it happens.
Think this guy's like totally innocent. Like I don't. You know what I mean? Like
I don't know that it.
I think he did some fireable shit already in two episodes. So what do I know?
Right, but again, that's my point, is he doesn't get fired for fireable shit.
Yeah.
He gets fired by students railroading him.
And that was my original point, is sometimes you just get fired in the court of public opinion. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
that doesn't happen to people.
But I don't think it's happening incorrectly in the way that this show seems to suggest. And I certainly don't think it's happening enough that requires art to be made of it.
Okay, well let's revisit that in a couple weeks and move on. Malice of the Palace. Which
and,
I think
all that being said,
Malice of the Palace.
Quickly, because we had a long debate about themes that you can't possibly understand without finishing the show. I wasted a lot of our time here. It's highly entertaining, and Sandra Oh is delightful.
Can we put that in like
the poll quote?
The poll quote from the episode?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, Sandra Oh's performance reminds me a little bit of her Killing Eve performance, you know, minus the spying and killing people.
Very similar frenetic quality to the performance.
Yeah. Frenetic's a great word. Mouse of the Palace. You want to do this one quickly?
Yep. Great doc. Everyone should watch it if you have any interest in basketball.
Enjoyable. I mean, I have to say that I sort of expected that the lens of a little bit more history would change our feelings about the people involved in those events, and that's what played out. But it's still pretty watchable. I thought it was interesting to see. It's weird, right? Like that the prosecutors in this case kind of got it all along, right? That the real trouble here was when fans got involved and sort of dealt with that appropriately. I felt
that
part I wasn't expecting. You know what I mean?
I did not realize that the prosecutors had gotten it right either. I do want to say here, not to toot my own horn, but just to make the point that it was not impossible. I was on this didn't change my opinion at all. It made me glad that the world seems to have come around, but I remember screaming at people at the time, like, what are you talking about? This is fans gone amok. This is like, what are you on about? A guy ran on the court and cocked his fist at Jermaine O'Neal.
Yep.
Like, I couldn't believe the way this was responded to. Now, look, Ron Artest is crazy, and maybe it was that I already knew that, you know, that sort of colored my perception here. And you know, you can play the game. Well, if Ron Artest never runs in the stands, none of this happens. And that's true, but I don't know.
There were any number of things that if Ron Artest hadn't done, it wouldn't have happened. But it also, none of those things in and of themselves were that bad. Like,
well, and
if he didn't lay down on the scorer's table, it wouldn't have happened. But like, who cares? He did. You know?
Right. And to me, when you're investigating an incident like this, you go to the first thing that is totally unacceptable. And the first totally unacceptable act is someone throwing a beverage onto Ron Artest.
Yeah. And look, I think it's telling that the prosecutors who watched all the footage, right, like in real time, identified where the problem was. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
That's telling.
Did you see that fight at SoFi Stadium that went viral?
I did not.
So there was this big fight that goes viral at the Rams-Chargers game, of all things, as if those teams have fans. And, you know, preseason game, and guys beat the crap out of each other. But there's like another, you know, there's a few videos of the fight that went viral on Twitter, and like the next day, another video went viral, shot from like below the fight, where you can see there's some dudes arguing and sort of like light chest touching and pushing, right? But it's not a fight. And some lady, like a row down, picks up a full beverage and just lobs it in. And then a huge fight explodes. It was oddly reminiscent to me, because like tempers flare all the time on the basketball floor. All the time. And it only explodes into a once in a lifetime fight in the stands when someone does something completely unacceptable, like throw a drink into the situation.
Well, and I think you see it. By the way, I'm saying this from a psychoanalyst perspective. I'm not trying to justify this behavior in any kind of way, but I think you can see in that incident that you described and in this thing, right, that I think there's this thing that happens sometimes when people are watching aggressive confrontation where they just kind of lose their, you know, it takes them to a different place and they lose their shit, right? So in the same way, like, that this lady was watching these people who just kind of chest bump and then came in way over the top, right? Like, it's not that different from the guy who is, you know, watching this melee happen and then all of a sudden is picking up a chair and throwing it at someone. You know what I mean? Like, just effing lost his head in the middle of that.
Right.
And it's, but, you know, I think these things sort of reverberate into bigger and bigger explosions, if that makes sense.
Totally. But I do think there's a difference between the chair thrower, who's a guy that, look, and again, definitely deserved to be prosecuted, but someone who, in the midst of a complete explosion of chaos, like, either saw an opportunity or lost his head and threw a chair, and the person who, before it explodes, decides to, like, throw an explosion into the mix.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure. Well, and look, I guess what I'm saying is, it's like, this thing started, you know, right, with this guy throwing this beer at Ron Artest, and rightfully they pinpointed him and he got what he deserved, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, right, as like Steven Jackson and the Pacers are walking across the, are walking off the court, right, there are dozens and dozens of people essentially doing the same thing, right?
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, no, because once the chaos happens,
right.
Humans are animals. That's what happens. Like, people devolve into an animal state.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, like, that's why you hammer the guy who changes things from a normal human event to a chaos event. Right.
Yeah.
That's why that's the person that need, because that guy is in a relatively calm moment and decides either like, this is my opportunity to get involved, or well, I don't know what goes through people's fucking heads, man. But
I think they stop thinking. Like you said, it's kind of this animal thing takes over.
Yeah, but I don't want to give that credit to the guy that throws the first beer. You know? I don't want to give that credit to the guy.
I'm not talking about that guy. That guy's just an asshole.
Right. So, like, I don't know what the answer is, but there's a little part of me that favors draconian punishment for that guy. Like, truly draconian. Like, for throwing that beer a decade in jail.
Well, we saw a bunch of these incidents, right, in the last
NBA. That's what I'm saying. Like, you spit on Russell Westbrook.
I think we have a sense of how to handle that now, right?
I don't know that we do. And that's kind of what I'm saying.
Mm.
Like, I know this is unreasonable, but there is literally, I'm not kidding when I say there's a part of me that says, like, you spit on Russell Westbrook at a basketball game, you go to jail for, like, years. Maybe even the rest of your life. I just think that stuff, I know it's ridiculous. I know how it sounds, but I'm saying, like, if that guy goes to jail for life for spitting on Russell Westbrook, how many more spitters are we going to have?
Right. What I think you might be kind of headed towards, and what I think would need to seem to be reasonable, is that if you do something like that in a forum like that, that you will should be susceptible to incitement to riot charges, which I think are pretty heavy. So
yeah, I think you should have that, but I also think you should be publicly shamed.
Well, and that's what I was talking about in the events this year, knowing how to handle it, is that we're putting the blame in the proper place. These people are getting prosecuted and banned for life. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, look, obviously it's continuing, so maybe things need to be heavier. But I do think that we've gotten better about this. And I certainly think we've gotten better about the language that we use to talk about these players. And that part of it, much like when you're watching, like, you know, the Britney Spears doc from a couple of months ago, like, just the way we thought about stuff, 10, 15 years ago, you know, you go, oof, man. One other thing I thought was interesting that I kind of hadn't really considered coming into it is that when you look back on Reggie Miller's career, you don't really think that much about the Palace really intersecting with his career arc. So I thought the way that they kind of wove his story into this, you know, even though he was street clothes that day, it made a lot of sense and was interesting, even though I've heard Jalen talk a little bit about it. And maybe Steven Jack in the past.
I agree.
It was an interesting light to show, and I thought they did a good job of that.
Yeah, beyond just the footage and, like, the pure information of, hey, you know, this is what happened to those guys you may not have realized. I thought it was really good storytelling. It's just a really, really good documentary, honestly.
I was doing nights on the radio back then, and so I happened to have this game on.
Wow.
As it was happening. Yeah, so I watched the whole thing. And just remembered being stunned and, like, trying to do a radio show while it was happening.
Yeah, that's crazy. I watched it, but I was young. I was a young man.
Yeah, well, that's probably the differences in our ages there.
That's it.
There we go. All right, let's talk about Reservation Dogs and then jump into the challenge. How many of these did you watch?
I'm caught up, so 4.
Oh, all right. So I watched 2 of these as well.
We're not going to have a protracted debate that separates us on this one, I promise.
No, but I don't think we need to talk real long about this one, but I just think it's another triumph for FX in their series of just sort of telling interesting stories about young people, and really giving us these sort of vivid, interesting worlds.
And that feel really real in a certain way. And look, like, I don't know what life is like on a reservation. You know, I have no concept of the Native American experience, but it feels real. And these feel like real people and stories that could be, you know, I mean, it's for TV, so it's the craziest of the stories, but it feels honest. And I guess this is to tie it back to our argument about the chair without getting into the theme part. Like, that show felt so contrived to me, and this just is the opposite of that.
Well, it certainly feels a lot more naturalistic, even though some of the stuff that they do obviously is not supernatural.
No, not at all. And that's kind of my point, is like, it's not like by plot this is far more ridiculous, but
yeah,
it just feels more like real people and real stuff, you know? And I'm not troubled by the themes, because it doesn't feel like you designed a whole thing to say something to me. It feels like you're just telling me a story about people.
Yeah. I really like these characters so far.
They are
a lot
so good, and with a couple more episodes, they only get better. They're funny. Yeah. There's like heart to it. And in a very short time, they managed to create real stakes, and they made me care about characters that I you know, if I really think about it, I have to say I know very little about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I you know, I don't think either of us has a lot of experience with res life in Oklahoma.
No,
so.
No, no. But God, and it really, and this also, it really is funny.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. It is funny.
It's much of the like heart and like realness and you know, all the stuff that comes with some of Taika Waititi's best work. It has a definite Hunt for the Wilder People feel.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a definite recommend.
Yep.
And you know, maybe you don't need that from us, because I think the word's getting out that the show's pretty good. So. All right. Next up for FX, I think, right, is that Bill Clinton American Crime Story.
Oh.
I'm curious about that one.
I didn't even realize that was coming, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
We got to get to the challenge right now.
Monica Lewinsky, I guess, was pretty prominently involved in the making as well. So that
doesn't surprise me at all. She's out there. Living her best life.
she is out there, man. Good for her. Good for her. That's another one. I think when you look at it in retrospect, oh boy.
She has done an incredible job of like salvaging a life out of what happened to her and what was done to her, because that's the right way to describe it. I think.
I feel like that would break 99% of people. What happened?
Yeah, and I mean, I obviously she went through some tough times, but like she has come out of it and she's open and she's willing to talk about whatever, and she has come to grips with her role in everything that happened, and good for her.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about that when the show comes out. I'm not finding the date here. I need to get a Google.
Who cares?
All right, let's get to the challenge.
Yes.
I kind of want to start here, because I think I just want to take a 30,000 foot view right now, because I do not understand what the fuck the rookies are doing in this game. Like, and it's to the point where it's like it's driving me crazy, right? That like. The vets have this alliance. It's been spoken of at this point, right? Not just in like ITMs. Like, I've heard rookies talk about it. Every week, we are getting rookie teams thrown in against rookie teams, and the rookies are aware of this as well. They certainly talk about it, and yet most of the teams are rookie veteran teams. Right. So a rookie veteran team, I think, has won every one of these challenges so far. And every time the rookie is just like, yeah, sure, veterans, do what you want to do. We'll let you pick who gets to go in. Why? Like, I do not understand why the rookies are just allowing themselves to be picked off in this game. And now they're at the point where they're outnumbered and they're going to have to win challenges to change this dynamic in any way, shape or form. And to this point, we're three episodes in now, right? Like, none of them have said, we got to do something about this. We rookies, we got to figure out how to stick together. Like, when Tasha and Jeremiah are in deliberation and they're like, we'll say somebody else's name, and they immediately turn to another rookie team, I was literally like, what are you doing? You know, like, am I wrong about this?
The best part about the last thing you described is Tasha's like, well, I have to say the rookie team. And Coryell goes, do you? Do you have to say my name? Do you have to?
Yeah.
He's the only rookie that has anything figured out. And he says as much in his ITM, like, this is a disaster. we outnumber them and we're getting bullied. And here's the thing. You also left out the best part, which is because of the structure of the game, like, not only is everything you said true, but all those rookies on rookie vet teams that feel like they're protected because they're with vets, like, you're going to get dumped.
Yeah.
You can get switched out at any time, you idiot. And
like,
and there's
I
only
love Ed Beastown, but when he's just like, I'm along for the ride, I'm like, Ed! Ed, Ivy League Ed, use your effing brain here, dude.
Ivy League Ed is along for the ride like a booster rocket on a spaceship, and he's going to get cut loose when they're headed for the moon, man.
Moron!
So, look, it's all very dumb, and there's only one explanation, and I think it is the explanation, and it as disappointing as it is, I'm afraid it's the way things always have gone, because none of these rookies watch the show.
I don't think that's true, because I have heard rookies talk about veterans on the show and mention things that they have done. I think a lot of these rookies watch the show, which to me means there's even less excuse.
See, okay, let me rephrase. These rookies don't watch the show like us.
Maybe that's true. But you don't need to watch the show real closely to know that that rookies get picked off every year, right?
No, but like, you have to think about strategy when you watch the show to apply it to your strategy when you're on the show. And I think what happens is it's only been 2 weeks for them or whatever, less probably. You know, they're quarantined. They're ripped out of quarantine. Bam, they're doing this thing. Bam, they're doing that thing. And before they know it, they're outnumbered because they weren't locked in from the start. You know what I'm saying? I just think it must happen so fast. And like all of a sudden you're script, like, look at, again, there's no reason why you would go for the other rookie team in the situation that Tasha and Jeremiah were in. And Jeremiah couldn't even speak, and Tasha just like lashed out at the one other team whose name had been mentioned without thinking about it.
Yeah. If we are, I mean, we're talking about people who, you know, a lot of these rookies are coming from Survivor, right? A game in which the strategizing is endless. It's just so hard for me to imagine that these Survivor people would not have studied the game and gameplay and hit the ground running with some sort of social strategy. And yet it appears that has gone that way.
Yeah, I do think we probably, from where we're sitting, underestimate the like emotional effect of being dropped into a house as a rookie in a place where all these veterans are very comfortable and you're on a team with one of them and they're in your ear. And like, again, like none of these are good explanations. They're excuses, but I feel like they're reasonable excuses, if that makes sense.
It seems to me like the one rookie who who were thinking this way, were the ones that got eliminated in the first week. And then went out the window with them.
Well, and that's the other thing, right? Is like there is the one guy who's told you, like, hey, we got to organize, and then he's the one who's targeted. So you don't want to hang out with him.
Yeah, but again,
it's
right,
dumb.
If you get everyone together and go, guys, for the first time in the history of this game, there are more of us than there are of them. If we just stick together, we can get them all out of the game.
You know what, though? It's not the first time.
Okay, maybe not the first time, but whatever.
Well, but
there's more of us than there are of them. We just have to stick together. Then I can't imagine that you couldn't sell that to all the other rookies.
I just think it's hard
for you, right? Like us. It's never us, guys. You know what I mean?
I just think it's hard to organize and get your crap together that quickly when it's your first time on the show. I mean, that evidence suggests years of history.
I mean, they're mostly hanging out with each other, other than the hooking up that seems to be going on. It's a lot of rookie vet hooking up, I've noticed.
Yeah, there's a lot of – that's because the vets have all boned each other already, and they're just waiting for fresh meat.
Yeah, except Amanda. Amanda's right. She's a few seasons away. She's like, let me jump on this Fessy thing.
Yeah, I mean, Fessy is fresh meat to Amanda.
Can I just say that Nelson referring to himself as daddy was creepy. Not in a you need to be canceled way, but it just made me shudder way.
Yeah, I guarantee your shudder was less significant than my wife's shudder.
He just had a look on his face too as he was saying it. It was like, I mean, I know he was, you know, mugging for the camera a little bit. I'm not really like, I'm not trying to say Nelson's a creep, but
no,
yeah, It's not good vibes. It's not good vibes.
It was poorly executed. Because he knew exactly what he was trying to do. He just failed.
Yep. Yeah.
And yeah, that you'll be happy to know that like an adult woman reacted similarly.
Yeah. Yeah, I am happy to know.
I actually wrote it down
in my notes. There's one point the rookies talked about the Vet Alliance, and then they're like, well, got to win today.
Yep.
And I'm like, why are you thinking that's the only solution? Like, this only works if a rookie team somehow wins the challenge?
Yep. They are not on it.
No, they're not. And it's going to cost them, right? Like, they are just the numbers now, right? The Vets have figured out that they are in control of this game unless something happens. And that's the thing is, like, I think the whole Tory Big T thing, I think that Tory knew all the time that she was not voting for Big T, and they just played that up, because it's more entertaining TV if you think that there's another option. You know what I mean?
You might be right, but as a lover of Tory, I was worried that she was going to do it. I was like, Tory, no, don't be dumb. Don't get knocked out early again. Come on. So it worked. Like, you're probably right, but they tricked me into thinking she was legitimately considering it.
There's way too many rookies still left in this game to pull.
Way
that
too out. Many. Maybe it's way too
down,
early.
Maybe they're down to like four or five or something. I could see right. it, but
no, there's like 10. It's way too early. And you know, look, I'm fine with this because I was thinking about it during. There was a part of me that was going through everything you've just said, like, oh god, these idiot rookies again. They're getting bit. But then I was like, but would I rather see, you know, Tasha, God love her, and Jeremiah, who, like, I don't, now he's still there, but in theory, I'm not attached to Jeremiah. Like, I am.
I'm not, you know, and I say this as someone who still has him on my bench on my challenge fantasy team. Not all that impressed. Not all that impressed with Jeremiah so far.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We talked about this a bit last week. He could sort of be a sleeping giant. Physically, he's a monster, and yeah. It wasn't his fault that they DQ'd.
Hey, great. I'll give you a pass on the Black People Swim competition. You know what
okay,
I'm saying?
And also, let's put aside Black People Swim. You swim, yeah?
Yeah, I can swim.
Yeah, same with me. And I think, yeah. I'm not saying we'd probably be like about average in that group. That looked horrible. I got no problem jumping off a 30-foot cliff, but swimming in a narrow cave in, like, big waves? I don't know, man. That was some stuff. Like, that looked tough.
Yeah. Well, look, they said it was the hardest challenge of the season so far. You know, and sort of everyone agreed. And poor Tommy. Like,
brutal.
naked on the beach and I don't know where I am, Tommy. That was...
Yeah,
I was as dazed as I'd seen a contestant, and I was not surprised that they did not allow him to continue.
I mean, I diagnosed that concussion when he was puking on the beach. So yeah.
But I was surprised at the bonds that he apparently had formed with people on the cast. It's nice to see, though, right? Like, that people are making friendships, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
After just a couple weeks, it's cool.
Yeah, you know, this is another, the challenge I thought was really good and so spy-ish, even though it's, like, over the top and stupid on a certain level, like, I really enjoy the spy game aspect of this.
I thought it was a cool-looking challenge. It did bother me that they called it a recon mission when you were just grabbing bombs. Like, that's not recon. Recon is you're getting information.
Yeah, they could use some work on the names. But, like, Sea Cave Extraction. There you go.
Yeah,
fix it
Extraction.
For you.
Great. You know what I mean? Yeah. Disarmament or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah, it wasn't recon. That's not what you were doing.
No, it's not recon. But it was...
It was kind of a simple challenge. I mean, like... It was a difficult challenge, but a uncomplicated challenge, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a little surprised at the fact that they went only female elimination. I mean, I know they wanted to even the numbers, but I thought they would have either brought someone else in or just, like, you know, gone double or something. I don't know.
I think they're out of alternates.
They must be out of alternates. They must be out of alternates. Here's my other question.
The assassin saw it coming, right? It came up in the deliberation
room. They
did,
yeah.
Female.
Let me ask you this. Does Tasha have fair reason to lose her shit at Tori?
I thought it was a mild doing wrong of Tasha.
That's all right. What I thought. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's fair.
I understand why Tasha was bothered. I thought she maybe went a little over the top on the reaction.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're leaving the show, right?
Right.
You might as well let it
happen. My last chance to make an impact. That's sort of how I read it. Because, like, the conversation was very low-key and like, hey, I'll do what I can. It wasn't like, I got you, bitch. You know?
No, it was that. But then also, right, she felt like that, you know, Tori congratulated the other player. And I could also see why that would have set her off. You know what I mean? That she felt like Tori was rooting for Berna.
I guess.
I can see why that made her mad. I did notice that TJ gave her a hope to see again. I feel like that's a good sign for her returning back.
I hope to see her again, too. Like, all of the rookies who are getting screen time, I think, are really good candidates to return.
I agree. I think they have a pretty good crop right
Which
now.
I think was important. Like, this cast was getting on the older side.
Yeah. And I think they are also cutting some weed. Like, some of the rookies that they've eliminated have been the ones you should, like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, Gears. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like Bettina. I don't know how much we need Bettina.
No, but that's what I'm saying. She's not really getting any screen time, right?
Yeah.
We're getting an awful lot of Emmy. We're getting an awful lot of Crazy Michelle and of Esther. Esther is
a
joy. In the
ITMs. Yeah. She's really like, I don't know. It's like we got a second Big T almost. You know what I mean? Like, just smart, social butterfly, not the biggest player, but everybody likes her. Great in the interviews.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Really
fantastic.
Good. Really good.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, Vampire Dude is great.
Emmanuel, Vampire Dude is definitely, he's my favorite, I think. Well, the both of the Romanians, I can't get enough of Emmy. She's so goofy.
Yeah. She's great. It seems like we talked about Jeremiah being a bit of a non-issue, but it seems like he's going to get a little bit of loving in the next episode.
Yeah,
I believe that was Amber.
I think the question with him. Is he sliding along under the radar, staying quiet, and a big threat? Or is he just coasting and gonna get knocked out soon because he's actually not a threat, and I can't tell.
No. It's hard to tell. He definitely, you know, puffed up a little bit when they were kind of in the box, but I guess that's sort of what you got to do, right?
And honestly, he didn't puff up that much. He basically was just like, yo, if I go in, I'm coming out, so know that.
And I'm coming for you. But he's like, I also think that if he had to do that particular event, I don't think it would have suited him very well. So he's probably lucky.
He is probably lucky. Although, I mean, I don't know that particular event suits all that many of the dudes that well. There's a lot of big ass dudes in there.
Yeah, I felt like it seemed like that was a real advantage for Berna going in.
No doubt. No doubt.
Just given her acrobatics background.
It clearly was a big advantage. I mean, she won, but beyond that, if she hadn't cracked herself across the bridge of the nose in the first, like, 5 minutes, she might have won a lot faster.
Did you notice her cuts in the ITMs earlier in the episode? Because I was kind of like, what's going on with her face?
No, I knew she was going in, fact, because of that. I was telling Joey, my wife, she's going in because look at her face.
Yeah, I should have put that together after they did the recon.
Because it was right between the eyes.
Yep. Yeah, so you can't miss it.
Yeah.
All
right, who you got for MVP? I think this is actually an interesting episode for that.
That's a really good question. I mean, Ed is the first name that is coming to my mind. But I was so, you know, he did so great in the Daily Challenge and then was so worthless afterwards.
Yep.
That I don't know. I think I kind of think I want to give it to Berna.
Yeah, Berna was in my top two. But I'm going to go off board. I think it's Devin. If I asked you who has been most in control of this game, it's Devin, isn't it?
Yeah, see, that's what I would think of. I would think of, if you're talking about control of the game, I would give it to Devin. And I did have in my notes, I think that Devin has this game. Like, when he's talking to it's Tori, right? And yep. I forget who the other vet was.
Anissa was there.
It was Anissa, yeah. Like, he just broke the game down.
He broke the whole game down.
His understanding of the rookie competitors, I thought, was really excellent.
Yep. Yeah. And he got them to do exactly what he wanted, even though it didn't totally work.
But I think it was the right thing to do. Like, I mean, I probably would have done what he wanted to, and it all sounded like it made sense.
Yeah. I mean, I might have sent Emmanuel in instead of Coryell, but Coryell was already pissed, so I guess why piss off somebody else? And that didn't end up mattering anyway. So, but boy, I'll tell you, I wanted to see Jeremiah and Coryell compete at something.
Yeah,
that could have been
Coryell, man. Like, in past seasons, you would have stopped picking on that guy. You know what I mean?
Well, but there's everyone's so big and tough now. It's like.
Including him. He's a big dude.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you might say, God, well, he's big. Let's leave him alone for a couple weeks. But then it's like, your next choice is another thumper.
I guess. I mean, Emmanuel's smaller than Corey.
He's smaller, but he's a vampire, so that's scary.
It's true.
Like, he's smaller, but I don't know that he's less intimidating.
Yeah. A burn of the week this week. Did you?
It was really tough. There were not a lot of like burns. There were a lot of sort of comments that were cutting in a certain way, but I wouldn't even have qualified them as burns. So I went with the very last words of the episode, which was effectively the Kyle special partial self burn. But the very last words of the episode were Kyle describing the Vet Alliance. Do you remember what he said?
Was he talking about snakes?
Yeah.
Talking about,
I wrote it down. He said, "We are the den of thieves. We are snakes in the grass." And he's right. They're going to attack each other. Oh, it's almost now that they have secured their advantage, they're guaranteed to eat themselves alive.
Yeah. I think they're going to pick off a couple more and then it's on. I also enjoyed Kyle's description of the elimination and hearing Nelson on one side and Ashley on the other.
Yes,
That was really great. The only other thing I thought about for Burns was people talking about how they wanted to get rid of Burns just so that Nelson would focus.
Yes.
That's
all the same shit I was thinking of. But Kyle being like, I'm stood between Nelson and Ashley, and on one side, that was excellent and very accurate. And also, they really, just the producers really leaned into watching Ashley watch Berna win, and like her like rooting for Tasha, and then the slow realization that Tasha was not going to win, and her anger over the situation. They got the whole picture, and it was really well done.
Yep, good job. Good job by them. As Tasha was on my fantasy team, I was also rooting really hard for Tasha, so I was kind of with Ashley in those moments. Like, when you see that one pole drop, and you're just like, oh, no, it's over.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I've decided that, when the day comes that TJ is no longer able to run this challenge, that Kyle should be that guy.
Wow. That's fascinating. I think it's Johnny, though, right?
Yeah, I'm not saying that's who they'd pick, but it should be Kyle. I think Kyle would be tremendous at hosting this show.
Yeah.
And I think TJ's going anywhere anytime soon, so that we'd get a lot more Kyle as a competitor before then.
Right. I mean, I don't hate that idea at all.
Yeah. I think it'd be great. I think I'm onto something there, challenge producers.
You very well might be.
All right. Anything else you got on this game? This particular week?
No, but it took we're like into the meat of the season, right? I can feel it. I can feel the challenge flowing through my veins.
Yeah, I don't think I think I said this last time that all the ingredients are there for this season to be amazing. I don't think it's been amazing yet, but I think we're getting close to when it gets amazing. That makes sense.
It's building. I would say this was the most amazing episode so far. Would you?
Yeah. I'd say this was the best one yet. At least it was the best one for competition. I think some of the other ones had some better verbal fireworks.
Well, the whole Bertha thing was good, but this really the competition. You know, you could tell this was the first day of like physical activity where everyone was like, "Oh shit."
Yeah. I would also say, if you're thinking about coming on this show and you're scared of heights, there's going to be heights. And if you're thinking about coming on the show and you're not real good at swimming, you're going to have to swim. So
yeah, the swimming is the bigger one, because like fear of heights is fear of heights and nobody chickened out. So credit to them. Like they all overcame that. You know, Huey puked on himself and still jumped off. So good for him. Right. And if you have a fear of heights, you're going to be scared. But as long as you can get it done, power to you.
Right.
It's the swimming thing.
It's a couple seconds, man. You don't have to do anything. You just got to fall, and it's over in a couple seconds. You know what I mean?
Totally. Right. But I'm not gonna crush somebody for experiencing their fears. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, that's fine. Yeah. You got it done. You jumped off, and you finished.
Right.
It's
but the swimming. It's there. Yeah.
You can control that. You just gotta. You gotta get ready to swim. You have to.
I mean, look, we've seen, you know, Corey talked about it, how he didn't used to be able to swim. We, you know, saw Leroy struggles with it over the years. Like,
it's very simple. It's out there, man. People who are serious about the challenge learn to swim, period.
Yep. Yeah, it's like practicing puzzles. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Got to do it.
Do some math. Get the math app on your phone like Tori did. Doesn't make you a genius, but you'll get a little better.
Yes. God, you know, I forgot we had the whole Tory OnlyFans discussion last week, and then all hell broke loose with OnlyFans in the meantime.
Yeah, so I guess she's not going to be doing porn. There you go.
No. OnlyFans changed their mind again. So porn is back on.
Oh, porn's back. Oh, good.
Yeah. So, that story went all the way around the world and back in between these two podcasts.
I mean, I said, oh, good, like I care. I don't, but it seems to me, based on a cursory reading of the situation, that like having porn on OnlyFans is important for the people who work in porn. So good.
Yeah, who make the porn. But also, like, I mean, look, it's a disruption to people who need money, and I'm not unsympathetic to that. But like, there would have been a new website next week. In fact, I think a couple already sprung up. Like,
sure.
People would have a place to sell their wares on the internet if that's what they chose to do. I'm not too worried about it. Yeah. But, you know, whatever. No harm, no foul. All right. Homework for next week.
Yep.
You ready? We're going to watch Vacation Friends.
Sorry.
Yeah. I feel like we're sort of pot committed on all things that Lil Ray Howard's in, right? I think we think everything he's done we've watched.
Lil Rel. So we should get his name right if we're pot committed. But yes.
I think I've got his name wrong every time, too. I might be pot committed to get his name wrong.
You might be. Lil Rel, one of Chicago's finest.
Yes. He's in this. John Cena's in this. Yvonne Orji's in this.
I also, by the way, am totally in on everything those two people do. So let's go.
Yeah. Did you see that Cena clip going around the internet this week where there was this kid whose mom had cancer, and Cena like gave him one of his wristbands at like a match, and then he gave the wristband to his mom when she was going into chemo, and Cena's watching the video of this kid talking about it. He like tears up. The kid shows up and he tears up, and it was John Cena's all right, man.
Yeah, shout out John Cena. I'm into John. I'm into all these wrestlers turned actors turned good guys. Let's do this.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And there's been a good run of them. I would not have guessed Bautista would turn out to be as good at this as he is.
Yeah.
All right. Nine Perfect Strangers is basically Nicole Kidman's White Lotus. Right?
Like, is it Nicole Kidman's White Lotus or Nicole Kidman's own personal Big Little Lies?
As I understand, it's a lot of similar themes to the White Lotus.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like it's rich people, with real first world problems at a vacation retreat.
All I know is when I said to my wife, "Hey, you want to watch that Perfect Strangers thing?" She was very confused. And I was like, no, not Balky, the Nicole Kidman one.
I tell you what, if you wanted to do nine episodes of Perfect Strangers for next week's pod, I'd probably go along with it.
You know, I don't even know. I wonder if we could even find that. We'd probably have to like search YouTube for it. But maybe another time. We'll save that for the Toy Department Classics podcast that we're launching on our network.
we should have a Toy Department's Classics podcast. I would definitely do that.
Yeah, I mean, all we need is someone to actually listen to this and then pay us for it.
Yeah, exactly. Please pay us for it. Only Murders in the Building is the last thing we're going to watch. That is also on Hulu. And that is Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much all I know about it, but I feel like that's all I need.
Steve Martin Short is a well-established American comedy institution, and I am in on anything it produces sight unseen.
Yeah. You know, I've been listening to that podcast about Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert.
Oh.
And there was a tremendous clip
of them. Some more Chicago's finest.
Yes. Tremendous clip of them trashing Three Amigos.
Oh, yeah.
In front of Chevy Chase, like on The Tonight Show. That hilarious. I was like, oh, man. Fantastic. Gene Siskel, afraid of no one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Afraid of I miss those guys. Both of them.
Siskel was less of a pure lover of the movies, so he used to really go after people.
Yeah, and just a real competitive dude.
Yep.
Related a lot to Michael Jordan. So,
yep.
So I guess he took that personally. all right. And I think that's it. I'm excited to talk to you guys next Thursday.
Yep. And, of course, more challenge. That'll do her. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.